Now for our final scripture reading from Matthew, chapter 5, 22 through 24. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, "You fool," will be liable to the hell of fire. So if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift.
Every time I've heard that verse, I kind of look around to see if anybody gets up to leave. And it's never happened. But it is a nice way to do a quick gut check in terms of, where am I with my neighbor and my relationships? Am I harboring any ill will towards somebody else? So have you ever heard these kind of statements like, "I can never forgive him for having an affair. I'll only forgive her if she acknowledges how much she hurt me and asks for forgiveness. And even then, I'm not sure I can really forgive her. He can rot in hell as far as I'm concerned. I hope the same comes to him eightfold that he caused to us. I can never forgive myself for listening, texting on my cell phone and causing that accident where that person died. Breaking promises, broken trust, adultery, murder, theft, physical abuse, verbal abuse, the number of offenses that we can commit and that can be committed against us are just huge. These offenses may vary in terms of degree, frequency, and duration, just like the pain and suffering that will follow. But today, I'd like us to just reflect on what are our beliefs in regards to forgiveness. What does it mean to forgive? Well, Webster gives the synonyms to pardon, absolution, exoneration. Forgiveness is not condoning, excusing, forgetting, pardoning, or reconciliation. Those are different things. Forgiveness is the intentional and voluntary process by which a victim undergoes a change in feeling and attitude regarding an offense, lets go of the negative emotions as vengefulness, with an increased ability to wish the offender well. So when those glasses were ripped off my face and there was some anger in the beginning and fear, it was replaced with a genuine love for this child and wishing the child well. Well, how did you learn about forgiveness? Did you learn from your parents, other significant adults, through church, maybe a movie or a book? And when you learned to forgive, did you learn to forgive unconditionally and immediately the way Jesus would have forgiven? Did you learn to forgive conditionally? It depends, you say. It depends on how that perpetrator responds. Are they really sorry for what they did? Or maybe it depends on the level of the impact on our life. You know, small things I can forgive, but those big ones, forget it. Or maybe it's about the person's past behavior. You know, the first time I can forgive, but what about the 15th time? Or finally, maybe it's tied into your healing. You know, right now I can't forgive. I've got to get through this pain, suffering, until I'm healed, and then I can forgive. Or maybe you came from the camp that didn't learn to forgive at all. Maybe you learned to seek vengeance, justice. Maybe you keep the offense a secret. Maybe it's something you did that you feel is so bad that you can't let anybody know, and you've just stuffed it inside of yourself. So what I'd like you to do is we're going to consider three different cases, and they're the reactions of families dealing with one of the most devastating things that could happen, and that would be the murder of one of your children, where the child did nothing wrong, and the murderer is unremorseful. And I've chosen one of these most egregious acts in hopes that if you can realize that forgiveness needs to happen here, then anything lesser than that surely would be forgiven. The first example comes from Malcolm Gladwell's book, David and Goliath, Underdogs, Misfits, and the Art of Battling Giants. It's the winner in Winnipeg, Canada. And Candace, a 13-year-old, receives a phone call from her mom and saying, "Honey, I can't pick you up from school today. I've got to take one of the kids to the doctor. We're late, and I've got two other errands to run. Please take the bus home today." She goes, "Sure, Mom, no problem." Candace never made it home that day. And Mom beat herself up for not having provided that ride. 7 weeks later, the Dirksons got the call from the police asking them to come to the police station. When they got there, the police told them that they found Candace bound and gagged a quarter mile from their house, frozen to death. When they got home, they were greeted by family and community members who surrounded them with love and tried to comfort them in their time of loss. About 10 o'clock, most of the people had gone, but then a knock came on the door, and a stranger in his 50s was at the door, and he said, "I'm the parent of a murdered child too. My daughter was killed in a donut shop 3 years ago." The murderer had been arrested for killing her, was tried three different times. He was imprisoned for 4 years, and then on another trial in appeals court, he was exonerated and let free. The man wanted something clear. The whole process had destroyed him. It had destroyed his family. He couldn't work anymore, his health. He went through a huge list of medications that he was on. And Mrs. Wilhelms reflected, she goes, "You know, he didn't even talk much about his daughter. He was just absorbed in this thing about getting justice." And then the man said, "I'm telling you to let you know what lies ahead." And after midnight, the man stopped and left. The Dirksons recognized the importance of this message. This is what could be. But the Dirksons had grown up in a Mennonite religious tradition where they had learned a different route rather than seeking vengeance or justice. The Mennonites have Dirk Wilhelms as one of their heroes. In the 16th century, Dirk Wilhelms was locked in a tower for his religious beliefs. He made a rope out of rags and was able to escape the tower in the middle of winter. And as he was racing across the icy moat, he made it across, but his pursuer, the guard, did not, and he fell into the icy waters. Wilhelms did the only thing he could do. He stopped and went back and rescued his pursuer. And for this act of compassion, he was tortured and burned slowly at the stake, saying, "My Lord and my God," 70 times. And that's the kind of philosophy that the Dirksons grew up with. It wasn't easy for her, but she knew that forgiveness was the path for herself and for her murder. The next story involves the Amish community and the West Nichols Mines Amish School. It was October of 2006. Mr. Roberts, the milkman who made deliveries to the Amish family, entered the one-room school with a bunch of weapons. He ordered the teacher and the boys to leave the classroom, and he lined the 10 girls up against the wall. And the 13-year-old, the oldest, stood forward and said, "Shoot me first." And he did, and he shot the rest of them until he finally shot himself and killed himself. The Amish community responded quickly, and the men rushed to aid, and the reporters were quick to follow. And one of the reporters shoved a mic in front of one of the Amish men and says, "What are you going to do now?" And he said, "Now is when we begin to forgive." The money started pouring in to help the Amish kids who were in the hospital. The Amish took a large portion of that money and set it up as a trust fund for Mrs. Roberts and her kids. 75 of the Amish people went to Mr. Roberts' funeral to comfort his wife and kids, more than Mr. Roberts' own family and friends. The Amish men, in the middle of the night, went to the school and tore it down. They didn't want any memorial of this incident. They only wanted a picture of God's grace, an empty field with a living tree. The Amish man told a reporter it had to go that way. He meant a lot more than simple predestination. He was expressing the acceptance of the fact that a certain thing had happened. It was a sense that what has happened couldn't be changed, and replaying a scenario of what could have been was now history. What has happened needs to be let go of. And with trust in God, we move on and pray that this evil thing will never be repeated. John Ruth was an investigative reporter at the tragedy, and he noted that he said, when we say forgive and forget, it's not that we try to erase mentally what has happened. What we forget is the imagination of the right to have emotional payback in the trespasser's punishment. Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do, is part of their theology. It's what they lived, it's what they live every day. So we come to the part where what was our bringing up in terms of forgiveness? Do you know what you believe, and do your actions match that? I grew up in a family that didn't model forgiveness. I went to Sunday school in my youth, and I knew the words and stories of the Bible, but rarely put them into practice. I never heard anyone in our family say they were sorry, other than when we did something, it was, tell your brother you're sorry, and say it like you mean it. And if you didn't mean it, you got sent to your room until you could come back out and say it like you meant it. I never heard anyone ask for forgiveness for something they'd done. We generally operated under the attack and defend model. If we were caught doing something wrong, we just seethed inside until we could catch them doing something wrong so we could prove that they were just as bad as we were and weren't any better. We always kept score. One time my mother gave my grandmother a beautiful nightgown. And my grandmother was a smoker. And one night she was smoking in bed and an ash fell on that nightgown. And it erupted in flames. And it burned her chest and shoulders and neck. She was in the hospital for over a month. And she continued to have pain, excruciating pain and suffering for months to follow. She blamed my mother for not buying a flame retardant nightgown. My mother countered that she'd bought the best one available. My grandmother was full of resentment, and both my grandmother and mother lived with that resentment for the rest of their lives. Everything was about placing blame, being right, and making the other person wrong. I grew up blaming other people for my actions. I was Mr. Teflon. When something came my way, I'd just make sure it slid right off. I wasn't willing to take responsibility for anything, at least until I was 16. I got a job working at Lamb's Thriftway and Garden Home. And because I was such a good worker, the produce manager said, Rick, I want you to be the assistant manager at 16. So I became the assistant manager, which gave me the key to the back room, which also had access to the beer and things. And about a couple weeks later, some friends came to me and said, Rick, you know, sneak the beer out of the back door for us. We got a big party coming up Friday night. I said, you know, I'm not gonna do that. Well, you know, Joe, who used to work here, used to do that all the time. And they kept wearing on me, and pretty soon I came to thinking, you know, what's a little bit of beer gonna be? This is a big store, they'll never miss it. So I decided to sneak 5 big cases out the back door where I burned garbage. Later that night, after the store had closed, my friend and I pull our pickup up, and the manager comes out and he says, where are you going with that beer? And we said, right back over here. That joke didn't fly real well. He said, you'd be back in the office at 3 in the morning. At 3 in the afternoon. So I show up in the office at 3 in the afternoon with no sleep at night because I'm pretty sure I'm going to get arrested. I don't know, maybe go to jail. And there they were, Mr. and Mrs. Lamb, Jim, my produce manager, and the manager who caught us trying to put the beer back in our car. And they all expressed their disappointment in me. Mrs. Lamb went on at length about, Rick, do you know how dangerous that alcohol is? Do you know what could have happened to you and your friends? What have you been drinking and driving? And her focus was totally on my health. It wasn't on the loss of property or anything else. And then Mr. Lamb said, you know, Rick, he says, you've been a great worker. But he said, I can't trust you here anymore, and I'm going to have to let you go. And not only are you not going to work here, you're not allowed in this store anymore. And I was feeling pretty low. And he said, I know you're a good worker and that you made a mistake. And I believe you're never going to make this mistake again because you're going to learn from it. When you apply for your next job, you put my name down as a reference. I'll let him know what a good worker you are. And I know you'll make me proud, and you'll be proud of yourself for the job you're going to do. So I had the presence of mind to apologize, to thank him, and to walk out of there knowing I wouldn't do something like that again. I know that their forgiveness of my actions helped change my beliefs and the way I acted. I started thinking about myself and how I called myself a Christian, and yet here I'd just broken one of the big ten, thou shalt not steal. I determined at that point that I was going to start living my beliefs, but I had to examine the way I was acting. I became more forgiving of others rather than seeking revenge or keeping score. If the lambs had forgiven me and I didn't forgive others, wouldn't I be just like that unmerciful servant described in Matthew? Since that time, I've learned a lot about forgiveness. I think about the Bible and the many examples it gives us. There's Joseph, who was thrown in the well and left for dead by his 12 brothers. There's David, who committed adultery with Bathsheba and then sent her husband to be killed, and God forgave him. And then there's the parable of the forgiving father, or the prodigal son, who, even though he wasted his father's fortune, his father welcomed him back. The Bible instructs us to forgive. Then Peter came to him and said, Lord, how often shall I forgive my brother who sins against me? How often? Seven times? No, I say to you, not seven, but 70 times seven. If the Bible isn't enough for you, medical and psychological sciences support forgiveness as a means of living happier and healthier lives. Researchers found that less forgiving people had a greater number of health problems and a negative outlook on life. My grandmother and the stranger who visited the Dirksons are examples of that kind of negativism. Finally, Jesus' examples resonates the best for me. His persecution and suffering on the cross, his willingness to forgive, for they know not what they do. When I think of the offenses committed against me, they pale in comparison. So I choose to forgive freely and immediately, independent of what that offender's actions or response is. Forgive conditionally, or choose not to forgive. What will you choose?